We will talk about the world of the blind this hour with a guest who has traveled the world, who is also an accomplished writer, speaker, poet, and who is blind. And we hope to hear from you this hour. We hope to hear from other sight-impaired or blind listeners or their loved ones during this hour, so we can hear your stories and your questions, too. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, November 14th. Are you or a family member blind? How does it affect the way you interact with the world and others? How do you, if you are sighted, view people who are blind? Maybe we can clear up some myths or misperceptions this hour, too. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Stephen Cusisto. He is a professor in the Center on Human Policy at Syracuse University. He is the author of several books, including Planet of the Blind, a New York Times notable book, which is just out as an ebook. He is also the author of Eavesdropping, a memoir of blindness and listening. He is also a poet and has a new volume of poetry out, Letters to Borges. And he has also been blind since birth, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. Hello, Wisconsin.
It's good to have you with us. Now, you have been almost completely blind since birth, is that right?
Yes, I was born prematurely in the 1950s, and back then they did not know that added oxygen during incubation destroys the still-developing retinas in the eyes of premature babies. And so many children born prematurely in the 50s have a condition known as retinopathy of prematurity.
Mm.
And it just means that your retinas are malformed, scarred, and don't function well. And as you know, the retina is really the kind of motherboard for eyesight. So my vision is extremely limited. I have vision, but it's relatively up close. Got to get my nose on that TV screen. Can't do it for long. That kind of thing.
Yet for a long time, you did not acknowledge this. You rode bikes. You played basketball. How did you manage to navigate the world, go to school without being able to see?
Yeah, well, first of all, I should say that that's a really common story among people with vision loss. It seems almost, unimaginable to people who see well, but blindness is a hard thing to adapt to, even if it's with you from the beginning. So a lot of blind people have done rather astonishing and amazing things, just simply endeavoring to, be in the world or have fun in the world. So I just want to say that I'm not unique in this way. When I finally went in my 30s to get a guide dog, I met all kinds of blind people at the guide dog school in New York, Guiding Eyes for the Blind, and discovered all kinds of people having done daredevil things, sometimes inadvisable things, but, still nonetheless pretty amazing.
Yes.
How do you manage? Well, I think in some respects, I went to school, public school in New Hampshire in the early 60s, long before the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I had teachers who took extra time with me. I'm really lucky to have had great early teachers who, sought me out and sat me down and really worked with me. So, to this day, I have great gratitude for early teachers who really helped. And then, of course, I sharpened my listening skills.
And I do want to talk about that. But why did you not want to acknowledge the fact that you couldn't see?
Well, that's a complicated story. My mother was very aware that, people with disabilities in the early 60s, late 50s, really weren't, welcomed in the public square the way they are today. And we forget it's been only 23 years since the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law, but that 23 years has really created a tremendous sea change in American culture. People with disabilities are now increasingly not only in the public square, but they're understood, you know, culturally to be a big part of the public square. That's a new thing. And so in the early 60s, you know, my mother feared that I wouldn't have a life, that there would be no place for me. And so without intending to, she really created a kind of, or not consciously anyway, she created a kind of dynamic where we knew I couldn't see, but we weren't going to talk about it. And we were just going to get me in the world and see what would happen. There's a plus side to that. You know, I became adventurous. But the downside of it is that you don't grow up with a kind of positive self-esteem, a story that lots and lots of people know, right? You don't have to be blind. Mm-hmm. You can know that story if you're a, you know, gay or lesbian or transgendered person, or, you know, you have an invisible disability, you know, or you have some kind of complicated eating disorder, or there are just a thousand ways you can feel that way, right? That you don't, you can't reveal, you shouldn't reveal, you should pretend, you know, it's not doable in the end. I mean, that's the thing, right? So Planet of the Blind tells the story of finally through, you know, endless hard knocks, realizing, you know, this really isn't productive.
Yeah. So when did you finally acknowledge that you were, in fact, blind?
Oh, I had to acknowledge it at you know, at all kinds of points in a life, right? I mean, I couldn't function like other kids in grade school or junior high or high school or college. I had to talk about it. But at the same time, I didn't want to live it outdoors away from, you know, my need for poorly constructed accommodations. So in the world, I didn't use a white cane, or I didn't have a guide dog, or I didn't know how to ask for help. And as I got into my late 20s and early 30s, I began to realize that I was leading a really limited life, never straying far from, you know, my familiar neighborhood, not going places alone. And that began to rankle me, you know, because you want to live in the world and travel and meet people and see things and be a part of the mix. And so independent travel became crucial for me. And so I got a white cane and learned how to navigate with it. And then I had a near miss with a Chevrolet station wagon that was running a stop sign.
Oh, no.
And realized that a guide dog, it's not for everybody, but a guide dog is trained in a thing called intelligent disobedience. He or she, the dog, will back up if it sees something coming that you haven't seen. I mean, that you haven't heard, that you're not aware of.
Good dog.
So it gives you, yeah, good dog. So the guide dog can give you an added level of security, particularly in urban settings. And so I decided to make that jump. And that opened the door for me to traveling widely. And I'm now writing a book about this for Simon & Schuster.
Yeah, you got your first guide dog when you were in your 30s?
Yes, I wasn't. I was 38.
Mm-hmm. And why do you say they're not for everybody?
Well, some people don't like dogs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some people are allergic to dogs. You know, some people don't know. Well, first of all, some people don't know that they're free and that they're available to anybody who is legally blind, that the training is free, the trip to the guide dog school is free, everything is covered. You know, we live in a big country, and information, though you would think it's easy, it's still not. It's still hard for people who have disabilities to get the right information.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to say your forthcoming book is on guide dogs.
Yes. Yes. I am writing a book about life with my so far three guide dogs and about the guide dog movement and the beauty of it. You know, it's an appreciation of what a dog can do, what it can bring you.
Yeah, and we'll have to talk to you again when that book comes out.
Then we put the dog on the phone.
Now, do you have your guide dog nearby right now?
I do. Her name is her. My current guide dog is her name is Nira. N-I-R-A.
Nira.
And she's a big yellow Labrador, and she's right here.
Well, hi, Nira, and we will continue talking with our guest Stephen Cusisto, who is the author of several books, including Planet of the Blind, which just came out as an ebook, and we are talking about the world of blindness, and we're welcoming your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the world of the blind this hour with a guest who has traveled the world, is an accomplished writer, speaker, poet, and who is blind. And we're welcoming your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest would also like to hear from you if you're blind. Do you have a story that you'd like to share? Our guest is Stephen Cusisto. He is the author of many books, including Eavesdropping, a memoir of blindness and listening. I wanted to talk a little bit about active listening or the art of listening from a blind person's perspective as well during this hour. And Stephen, I believe you shared with us that clip of music that has some special meaning to you.
Yeah, that's a little piece of ancient Finnish music. My father was from Finland, and that's the kantela, a Finnish stringed instrument. It's a kind of harp, and that's a little bit of essentially Finnish folk music based on the epic Finnish poem Kalevala. In the opening chapter of Eavesdropping, I describe one of my earliest memories of listening, which was in Helsinki with my dad in the late 50s, and a group of very old women came out to hang their carpets on outdoor racks standing by the ocean, and they beat those carpets and sang that mournful song from Kalevala. And I describe in the book this amazing sense I had as a little boy that this was something soulful and profound and real, you know. And it stuck with me. And my father even said, "These are the old songs, you know. Listen, you know." So that's the kind of thing that we don't hear or see so much in the world anymore. In fact, when I was last in Helsinki, everybody, even two-year-olds, they're all walking around with cell phones.
Right. Yeah. Here too, of course. It does amaze me that you've traveled the world without being able to see, and you talk about being able to sightsee by ear. Can you share with us how you do that?
Well, first of all, let me be clear that there is actually a science to this that's known as orientation and mobility training, or O&M training. And anyone who is losing his or her vision in the state of Wisconsin can get this training right there in Wisconsin. You can get it in all 50 states, and it's free. And it's a way of knowing the world that maximizes your other senses. So learning how to hear, learning how to listen to parallel traffic flow, perpendicular traffic flow, obviously learning how to ask critical questions, of people who are adjacent to you. It's good to ask questions, right? You know, we
mm-hmm. yeah.
we forget to do that when we're sighted, right? We just go places on the laser beam of eyesight, but it's really good to ask questions when you have low vision or no vision. And you'd laugh if you went with me. When I walk in an airport, you know, with Nira, my guide dog, having been dropped off by a cab, I'll just park myself right there in the entryway and go, "Hey, anybody here know where United Airlines is?"
You know, good for you.
Because no one's going to walk up to you and offer you to help. And if you stand there, you'll just lose your mind. So you have to sort of plunge into the world.
Well, let me bring a caller into our conversation, Brian, in Fort Atkinson, who, Brian, it says here that you are also blind.
I am totally blind, yes.
Yes, and so what was your question?
Well, I was just wondering how you make it through airports and, do world travel and stuff like that.
Yeah. So we got a little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's a great question. Hi, Brian. Well, I have multiple strategies, right? I mean, I think asking for help is a big thing. You have to learn how to ask for assistance, or you just simply can't manage it. One of the things you discover when you travel is that the world is filled with good people, and people will help you. And you know, that's an endless gift. You find that humanity is rich and wide and rather amazing. So you get a lot of help. And no one, by the way, if you ask for help as a blind person, looks at you and says, "What? You want help?" I mean, people immediately get it, right? You don't have to, you know, there's no explaining. So I've had great help in airports from airline personnel, from other passengers, from airline pilots, from, flight attendants. People really will step up and some people will say, "I'm walking to that gate. Let me come with you." Other people, you know, from Transportation and Security Administration have accompanied me places. I mean, It's not so hard, but it does take a degree of willingness to say, "Hey, I can use some guidance here." So that's part of it. Another part is just allowing yourself to plunge in and say, "Yeah, I can do this." Once you're moving, then things happen. It's almost like writing a story. Once you're in the story, the story develops and good things happen. You know, you tell writing students that all the time. Keep words going and good things will happen. Well, it's that way with taking a trip, right? That you get going and then the good things happen. If you sit home alone and just imagine the world as an obstacle, then it will be an obstacle. But if you enter it, then things take place.
Have you been hesitant, Brian, to do much traveling?
I've never thought about world travel, you know, just wondered how people would do it if they were blind, you know, or being totally blind.
Yeah. There are blindness advocates who would frown on me for saying this, but it's good to go places with a sighted friend. And it's an okay thing to do, right? I've gone plenty of places solo, and that's exciting. But, if you have a chance and you want to take a trip to London and you've got a buddy, partner, associate who can go with you, who's always wanted to go, then that's a great thing. Because obviously they can describe things, right? Describers are good.
Yeah. And I read that you also travel by touch to some extent, like when you're in the gift shops, you're feeling the souvenirs of the various places.
Yeah, there's a wonderful and famous school for the blind called the Perkins School. It's just outside of Boston in Watertown, Mass, and famous because Helen Keller went there. And they have a whole touch classroom with all kinds of objects. It's like a great Victorian closet of explorers' knickknacks from all over the world. You know, everything from bird skulls to zithers, right? And people can go in there and feel these things and get a sense of them. And so touch is important, and Braille is important. Many people today are losing the ability to read Braille because of increased technology, talking computers, portable, talking gizmos. The iPhone, for instance, is a wonderful accessible device for blind people. But Braille is a good thing, too.
We have just a minute before we go to a news break, and we'll continue after the news. But you want to dispel the myth that a lot of people believe blind people have better senses when it comes to hearing or touch, and you're saying it. You got to work at that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We have to go to break, but when I wrote Eavesdropping, I said in the foreword that I didn't think this was necessarily true, that blind people automatically have better hearing, for instance. It turns out it is true. In the decades since I wrote that book, neurologists have concluded that rewiring, what we call neuroplasticity, takes place, and that the visual centers of the brain actually rewire themselves to work with hearing, which is a fascinating thing.
Well, let's pick up on that and take many more calls from our listeners who want to share or have questions. We are talking with Stephen Cusisto, who is the author of many books, including The Planet of the Blind, which is now out as an ebook. We'll continue after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Our guest this hour rode a bike as a kid, traveled the world as a teenager, he went bird watching, all while refusing to admit one key truth about his life. He could not see. This hour we are talking about the beautiful, the magical, and the sometimes frightening world of the blind. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, November 14th. Our guest is a professor, a poet, a blogger, a speaker, and an author of several books, including the best-selling memoir, The Planet of the Blind, which has just been released as an ebook. He also has a new poetry book out, Letters to Borges, and he is the author of Eavesdropping, a memoir of blindness and listening. We are talking about all of this. He is sharing with us the art of listening from a blind person's perspective, how he sightsees and travels by ear. And he wants to know that he wants us to know that blind people are not helpless and wants other blind people to tell their stories. Maybe you have one. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Stephen Cusisto is also a professor in the Center on Human Policy at Syracuse University. He has been blind since birth. And I just played some Tibetan drums. And did you, Stephen, also suggest that? Is that something that will help us with the art of listening? Oops, I'm sorry. I always forget to push the right button. There we go. Are you there?
Am I here?
Yes, you are there.
Actually, I'm in Tibet. I love the Tibetan drums because they, if you really listen to the timbre of that drumming, the notes expand outward, and they kind of hint at how sound can travel. And you know, we tend to think of sound as just an immediacy, as a kind of utility, as something that we pay for, that it's, you know, messages from your phone or your radio. But there's a probative beat in a Tibetan drum. And by that I mean it's full of curiosity. The rhythms are like your heartbeat. They're in tune with respiration. But they're not drum beats that are imprisoned inside a song. They're deeply imaginative. And, I love thinking about the way that sound can be richly imaginative, that when we hear things, it can stir our own imaginations, which is what great classical composers hope for us when they hear, you know, a symphony, that we will have our own beautiful fantasy landscape inside our own heads, right?
Mm-hmm. How has blindness helped you develop qualities that may have lain more dormant otherwise?
Well, I think that's definitely true. And, you know, not only do you learn how to listen carefully for traffic, but you begin to listen to the entire soundscape. I was joking with a friend recently. We were standing in my backyard, and we were having a conversation. And while we were talking, I was hearing two blue jays fighting in a tree. Mm-hmm. I was hearing a kid practicing piano down the street. I was hearing a lawnmower. I was hearing some crows. I was hearing all these things simultaneously. And they were making a kind of, you know, strange found music in my head. It's kind of like you become John Cage. You can't help it.
I was just imagining in my mind's eye the blue jays fighting in the tree and the guy, you know, pushing the lawnmower. What are you seeing, if that's the right term, when you hear these sounds?
Well, that's a good question. The imagination is a very rich thing, and so I may be thinking about, you know, the light on the orange flowers in the backyard and, you know, imagining working my way through a field full of horses, or, you know, I may be having associative images going on in my mind. Sometimes I just let everything become its own kind of call and repeat, and I just concentrate on it, and so I'm not necessarily seeing anything. Yeah. It's interesting, right? The mind is always moving.
Mm-hmm.
So one of its virtues.
Let's take some more calls. We have many people who are waiting. Camille in Frankfurt is with us. Hello, Camille.
Hi, Joy and Stephen. I'm interested in knowing whether or not you feel that your sense of intuition is any different from sighted people.
Oh, that's a great question. One of the old metaphors of blindness comes from the Greeks, right? Tiresias was the blind psychic, the blind seer, in Euripides. One of the things that's come down to us is the idea that blind people have this great sort of secret power of divination and intuition. But I think that generalizations are sort of wrong. They're right and they're wrong at the same time. For instance, there's no such thing as the blind. There are literally thousands of ways to be blind, thousands of ways and times of life in which it happens. No two people who have blindness are alike in any kind of particularized way. They're not even alike in the way they experienced it. It would be like taking all 12,000 taxi drivers in New York and assuming that they're alike because they're taxi drivers. And, of course, that wouldn't be at all true. So are there some blind people who have great powers of intuition? I'm willing to bet you there are. I have a friend, Shirley, who's actually an animal communicator. And can tell you what animals are really thinking. And I can tell you she can really do it. It's amazing the stuff she can say. She's not blind, right? She mm-hmm. just happens to have that kind of gift. So I think some blind people are inherently and wonderfully musical, but would they have been musical if they weren't blind? Quite possibly, right? So these are complicated questions.
Yeah, well, and we have another one, actually a story about a blind man playing music. Dan in Drummond is with us. And Dan, it's not you, it's someone you saw.
Yeah, when I first started playing organ back in the 1973, my aunt and uncle took me to a place in a suburb of Twin Cities. The place was called Cicero's. Roseville was the suburb. And the gentleman that played organ had been completely blind from birth, and the organ that he played was a giant theater pipe organ with over 1,000 pipes and accessories. And when I heard this guy play, his name was George Sumner. He died young at about 46, but that was one of the most natural highs I personally had ever been on.
Wow. That is a fabulous story.
Now, I want to make your day if I can.
Okay.
blind gentleman goes into a furniture store with his dog and starts spinning the dog around his head. Clerk says, "What the heck are you doing?" Blind guy says, "Just looking around."
Oh, no.
Good hey, one, that Dan. Works.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, thank you, Dan, for that story. Pat in Grafton is with us now. Hi, Pat.
Looking around.
Uh-oh, Pat. We need you to turn your radio off and talk into the telephone. I'm going to see if you've got that radio down.
Pat is with us now. Hi, Pat.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pat says her mother is blind and would like her to take advantage of technology that is available that could help her. Hopefully, mm-hmm. Pat is listening to this on the radio. Do you have some advice for her?
I do. If Pat lives in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services has the Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired. OBVI. And if you go to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services website, dhs.wisconsin.gov, there's a link to the, I'm taking a long time to say this, Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired. They offer all kinds of programs for people facing vision loss at any age. So adaptive equipment, adjustment skills, rehabilitation, all kinds of support. And they're a great organization. A shout out to the Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Wisconsin. And there's all kinds of adaptive equipment nowadays for people who are, dealing with vision loss.
Yeah. And our caller did drop off. But what if perhaps she was concerned that her mother was hesitant to use any of these new technologies or ask for assistance? Is there anything her daughter can do to convince her mom to accept the help?
Yeah, that's a good question. With all disability, not just blindness, but any disability, the first stage, of course, when you begin to have that kind of impairment is depression. Mm-hmm. And, the sense that there's no way forward. And, of course, it's not true. There are fabulous ways forward, but you have to, get to the place where you can embrace them. One of the ways is to actually just get there, go and see what's available, because there are wonderful things available. And then once you discover that, then things begin to feel better, right? The Library of Congress has its talking book program. The National Library Service for the Blind and Visually Impaired, they will give you a free digital book player. It's like a portable tape recorder, and you can get the books delivered for free on little digital cassettes that plug into the machine. It's so easy to use, even people who are technophobic can use it, and you can get any book or magazine just about. And then obviously there are all kinds of other technologies available now. Every Apple product is blind friendly now. So even the iPhone, every application will talk. You can read books with an iPhone, So there are all kinds of things, but you got to go look.
Our guest is Stephen Cusisto. He is a professor. He is a speaker, he is a blogger, and he is the author of many books, including Planet of the Blind, a New York Times notable book, which is just out as an ebook. He also has a new volume of poetry out, Letters to Borges. Maybe we'll get him to read a poem when we come back, one of his poems. And we welcome more of your questions, your experiences. Are you or a family member or loved one blind? How does it affect the way you interact with the world and others? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Stephen Cusisto, who is the author of many books about being blind. And he is also the author of a lot of poetry, and he has a new volume of poetry out, Letters to Borges. And I know, Stephen, that you were prepared to share with us one of your poems. What is this?
This poem is called Elegy for Ray Charles and His Mother. Everyone knows Ray Charles, of course, the great blues singer, and many people saw the wonderful film that came out about 5 years ago about Ray Charles. We all know he was blind, but what I love is the fact that his mother was such a tough person. You know, when he was a little boy and blind, she really pushed him to do what other kids do. And so this is a little poem about the fact that she made him carry heavy buckets of water and how that helped him become a musician, which is a strange thing to think, but it's kind of true, right? So here's the poem. Oh, it mentions the Pharaoh of ancient Egypt. You know, people in ancient Egypt used to carry water buckets on a yoke that you would wear over your shoulders.
And before you read the poem, are you going to read this by using Braille, or do you have it memorized, or how?
I have it memorized.
Okay.
Ray, no one knows what it's like to carry water the way your mother made you carry it. Even the boy Pharaoh wore a yoke on his shoulders just to show he was a man. History doesn't matter much, at least until your child done gone blind. Your mama saw it. You always got to carry water, she said. This ain't no kidding around. Long time, you carried water in both hands, feeling for the path with your feet. Ray, your mama knew. A song comes that way, or else it never will. Laugh or cry, it's the same. A mockingbird listens from a telephone wire. Long time. Water. Both hands.
You always got to carry water.
You always got to carry water. And then you see, the thing I don't say, of course, is that he's singing while he's doing it. Right? It's kind of intimated.
And explain to us Letters to Borges. Who is Borges?
Jorge Luis Borges was a great 20th century Argentine poet and also the director of Argentina's National Library. And he went blind in his late 20s. And he was an amazing writer, a world-renowned writer, both of poetry and of fiction and of philosophical writings. And yet he never learned how to travel independently as a blind person. Everywhere he went, he had to have a person guiding him and, you know, arranging everything for him. And, you know, over the years as I've traveled places, often, you know, solo with my guide dog, I've had great experiences plunging into the world, meeting strangers, discovering things, even getting lost in a kind of fun way and navigating, right? You know, everybody does this as a tourist, right? You go to, I don't know, you know, Berlin and walk around and you find yourself in a strange neighborhood and discover a great hat shop or something, right? That's part of the joy of traveling. And so I've had that opportunity, and that's an opportunity Borges never had.
Here's
I wrote a whole sequence of poems about that.
That's wonderful. Monette in La Crosse. Hi, Monette.
Hello, Joy. I love your show. And I almost didn't call in because it almost makes me cry. I have a friend who died a couple of years ago in her 40s, who had a degenerative disease, eye disease, and couldn't read anything, and finally ended up with a guide dog. But she lived the fullest life, and she had so many friends around the country. She actually, even half blind, lived alone on Raspberry, or one of the smallest islands, because she worked for the National Park System. She lived all alone as a
Fantastic.
And she also rock climbed and she kayaked and she traveled for her job. She was administrative in the parks, and was a wonderful person. Was from Madison, and her name was Darlene. And we all miss her.
Yeah, I'm sorry you lost your friend Monette, but sounds like she didn't necessarily let the blindness limit her in doing all those wonderful things.
Yeah, she did it her way.
Yeah,
that's great. That's great.
One more call from Jackie in Drummond. Hello, Jackie.
Yes, two quick stories. I volunteered at a community radio station, and for about 10 or 15 years, one of our DJs was blind, so they brailled all of our CDs. So as a memory to him, he's no longer there. When I volunteer there, you know, I remember him by the braille. And then we have another group of very active seniors, and every Wednesday we get together. And one of our fellows, Dave, is suffering from macular degeneration, but he doesn't let that bother him. And he hikes. We hike on the Berkey Trail, and he bikes and follows us with our bright vests on. So you don't even realize that he's, you know, visually impaired because he hangs with us and he's part of the group. So this is a very interesting program, and it puts life on perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
No, you're welcome. You bet.
Well, you know, I'm wondering in our last minute or so here, 2 minutes maybe, if you have sighted people are hesitant or confused about how to interact with people who are blind. How can sighted people better connect with blind people?
Yeah, I think it's not just blindness; it's all disability, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have friends who are wheelchair users who report people just looking past them. You know, there's that quality of, you know, nervousness around people with disabilities, and people don't know what to say, which I think is getting better because of the ADA and because kids in schools are now, you know, in classrooms with kids with disabilities. The mystery of this is breaking down. So someday this will be a thing of the past. But, you know, don't be afraid. Disability isn't catching.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get it. You know, I know that sounds flip to say, but, you know, I think people worry that, you know, if I talk to a person with a disability, I'll make a fool of myself. I'll say the wrong thing. Well, there are almost no wrong things to say, you know. Say hello. Hello's a good starting place, you know.
And I think we're gonna have to say farewell for now. And I hope that you'll come back and talk to us when your book on guide dogs comes out.
You bet. And by the way, I've been wearing my Cheesehead hat. Just want you to know.
Wonderful. Are you a Packer backer?
Go Pack.
All right. Thank
Go Packers.
You. Thank you so much for being with us. Stephen Cusisto is a professor in the Center on Human Policy at Syracuse University. Thanks to Marika Saval and Christy Taylor for producing this program.